Device Talkers. I'm Kayleen Brown, Managing Editor for Device Talks, and thank you for joining us on another episode of Device Talks AI. So my mom has four kids, and my brothers and I have been trying to get her to choose her favorite for my entire life. And she has been steadfast that she does not have a favorite child. I suspect I know which one it is, and spoiler, it's not me. But she has held on for all of these years that she has no favorite. So I'm thinking about that in reflection of the Device Talks AI episodes this year. And you know what? I think I might have a favorite. This episode of Device Talks AI with Dr. Rudolf Katra, the Vice President and Global Chief AI Officer at Medtronic, rocks. I'm not going to lie. Dr. Katra is not only warm and funny and kind and smart, he brought to life a memory that I had completely forgotten many, many, many moons ago. Apparently, my first interaction with a medical device actually happened when I was 6 years old. And it was in my conversation with Dr. Katra that that came up. So please, continue this episode and hear that anecdote come out. Hear the surprise in my voice. It was such a shock to me to realize that my love affair with the medtech industry started so many decades ago, far more than the number of decades that I've invested as an adult. So Dr. Rudolf Katra, he's the Vice President and Global Chief AI Officer at Medtronic. And you probably remember one of my earlier episodes of Device Talks AI with Dr. Ha Hong, who is the Chief AI Officer for Endoscopy for Medtronic. That was a great way for me to understand how Medtronic is truly embracing artificial intelligence. So to just a few months later, have the opportunity to meet, learn from, and speak with the global Chief AI Officer for all of Medtronic. I mean, what a treat, and also a testament to where our industry is going and what is important to one of the largest OEMs in the world. Dr. Katra and I discuss his journey from aspiring physician to academic to a leader in the medtech industry and how those experiences are informing his current role at Medtronic. We also dig into Medtronic's AI Compass, which is a guiding set of principles about the ethical AI use in medical technology, which I find particularly interesting because the two main questions that I get all the time, one is, how do you regulate AI in medtech? And the other one is, how do you integrate AI into medtech ethically? And Medtronic does a really beautiful job in trying to answer that question. So I highly suggest that you take a look at Medtronic's AI Compass and see where that fits in with you. Dr. Katra and I also discuss the innovative Accurhythm AI, which is enhancing cardiac monitoring and filtering out false data so that physicians can focus on what truly matters. And as you hear me say it all the time, more bandwidth for being human. So it's always a good thing. And lastly, we talk about the future of personalized medicine and how AI is going to create and is creating, rather, unique algorithms tailored to individual patients. I cannot wait to dig into my interview with Dr. Katra. I know you're going to find it inspiring. And you get that little Easter egg of the first time that I came face to face with the medical technology. But before that, I want to thank our sponsor of this episode, AcuityMD. So I have the opportunity to sit down with Mike Monobukas, the co-founder and CEO of AcuityMD. And I have been such a fan of Mike for years. So it's been a pleasure to sit down and learn from him, you know, how to better understand ROI for innovative technologies, navigating sales challenges, and the need for empathy in sales approaches. And of course, Mike and I talk about the potential future of AI in medtech. So let's start with the first part of my interview with Mike Monobukas, co-founder and CEO of AcuityMD. Mike Monobukas, co-founder and CEO of AcuityMD. Thank you so much for joining me on Device Talks AI. I'm thrilled to sit down with you.
Hi, Kayleen. It's great to be here. I'm excited to dive in.
Okay, great. So I know that our audience is quite familiar with Acuity MD. We love you. We love how you're impacting the industry and how you serve medical device companies. But just for those who maybe don't know or need a refresher, can you tell us a little bit more about Acuity MD?
At Acuity MD, we've built the commercial intelligence platform for the medical device industry. So we help med tech companies of all sizes get their products out to market. Our mission at Acuity MD is to accelerate adoption of medical technology, and we built a software and data platform to help sales reps, marketers, sales managers, national accounts directors understand where there's opportunity to sell their products and more efficiently get those products out to market. We work with about 300 medical device companies, six of the top 10, and we've been around for almost 5 years now, so still very much in growth mode, and just announced our Series B fundraise back in the spring. So excited to continue innovating for the medical device industry for years to come.
Well, again, congratulations. It's so surprising to me that it's only been 5 years. It's one of those that I feel like you've been an institution in the industry for so much longer than that. So kudos to you and your team for making sure that you are such an important role in the medical device ecosystem. So shifting gears a little bit, Mike, I always ask my guests, you know, what is your personal definition of artificial intelligence? That term can be overused and it's very confusing. So walk us through it. What is AI from your own interpretation?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think the term has been overused and has been in the discourse for decades now. And so it's hard to, it's almost like the boy who cried wolf. Like, do we have artificial intelligence now? For me, I think the last year, the last 18 months has been transformational, at least for my personal, you know, definition of AI and seeing the impact that LLMs in particular have had on automating a lot of work that previously took a ton of time. So my personal definition for artificial intelligence is really, you know, when computers and software systems can automate tasks that require human intelligence. So I'm not just saying tasks like data entry or tasks like analytics, tasks that require human judgment, that require synthesis and reasoning. That is my definition of artificial intelligence is, you know, when, you know, man-made objects, equipment, software, you know, computers can pretend to be human and start to reason and connect dots like humans do. That's my personal definition of artificial intelligence.
I really like that. It kind of shifts the conversation from just saying that artificial intelligence is a sophisticated pivot table. You know, it's so much more than that. And I like how you associate it with the human reasoning and connecting those dots. And I could not agree more. 18 months ago, I don't think I would have asked. 18 months ago, I wouldn't have this podcast. I mean, it's really just, you know, large language models really have just changed so much. So again, thank you for your personal perspective. Let's dig into more about how artificial intelligence is impacting the industry. So with AI introducing entirely new technology and treatments that health systems may not currently have benchmarks for, how can companies build an ROI case for innovative tech?
Yeah, absolutely. Kayleen, it's a great question. And one of the analogies I like to use or think about when considering AI in med tech is looking back to the impact robotics had on the industry over the last, say, two decades. You know, if you kind of rewind the clock, when Intuitive first launched, they kind of struggled with product market fit in those early days, you know, focusing on cardiac and eventually found very deep product market fit in colorectal and some of the other surgical specialties. And now it's, you know, the standard of care in many. And similarly, when Mako first got acquired by Stryker, I personally remember actually running expert calls about that acquisition, and people thought it would be impossible to make robotics mainstream in the orthopedic context. And look at where we are now, right? So if you rewind the clock, I think there's an interesting, you know, set of learnings to take from that robotic technology adoption curve that we can now apply to AI. Because, you know, the road wasn't easy. And in many ways, they are similar technologies. They're both game-changing advancements in technology that can level the playing field, democratize the playing field for providers. But it's really expensive, right? It's really expensive to manufacture a robot and design a robot. It's also really expensive to train a language model, train an AI model, right? So there's a high upfront cost to developing these technologies. And at the same time, payers are really skeptical about reimbursement. And indeed, in the early days of robotics, they were. In the early days of AI, they are now. And so that makes the ROI case for these technologies paramount, right? They're cutting edge technologies, but without clear reimbursement, med tech companies need to learn and need to demonstrate ROI to drive widespread adoption of AI. And specifically, what I think that means is, you know, helping educate hospital executives, administrators on how does this AI technology help drive revenue for the hospital? How will it help drive efficiency gains for the hospital? How will it help increase case volumes? These are questions that the robotics companies got really good at answering in their pursuit of product market fit as they kind of got commercial traction. And companies that are now selling AI products will also need to master those answers. They will also need to really communicate that ROI story around revenue growth or efficiency gains for the hospitals. And I think there's a really compelling case for AI on both of those dimensions. So I'm excited to see that, you know, and play a role really in helping companies articulate that ROI case so that hospitals and surgery centers can end up with this cutting edge technology, AI, to help them improve patient outcomes and improve their financial position as well.
Extremely well said. And I love the parallel to surgical robotics. You cannot be more right. I've been in the industry now almost 2 decades. So I've seen the naysayers. I've seen that this will never be adopted widespread sort of conversation that happens every time you get a disruptive technology into the market or into med tech. I'm going to take a quick break from our conversation. So for those listening, if you want to learn how AcuityMD works with medical device companies, please go to www.acuitymd.com. That's AcuityMD.com. And we'll be back with Mike Montebukas, co-founder and CEO of AcuityMD, shortly. But now we get to dig in the good, good. So please enjoy my interview with Dr. Rudolf Kathra, Vice President and Global Chief AI Officer at Medtronic. Dr. Rudolf Kathra, Vice President and Global Chief AI Officer for Medtronic, welcome to Device Talks AI.
Hey, Colleen, call me Rudolf. Thanks for having me.
I'd be very happy to, and thank you for spending your time with me. There are so many questions I have for you, but I know we only have a limited amount of time, so I really thoughtfully put together a list of questions. But if you want to deviate, do not hesitate, because I know that our audience is very keen to get to know you and get to know how you're influencing Medtronic with an AI strategy. So let's start from the very beginning, Rudolf.
Let's do it.
All right. So I know that you have a background in academia, and you found your way very clearly into medical technology. Can you walk me through what that path looked like and how the transition has been from academia into the world of medical devices?
Oh my gosh. How long do we have?
We'll spend all 30 minutes on this. So, and actually, our audience loves it, so go for it.
Brace yourself. It'll be a whirlwind tour. So I started my career planning to be a physician, and I was doing my medical formation, and then through that I was like, you know what, I'm missing a lot of the engineering disciplines, a lot of the critical thinking that comes with you know, the hard sciences. So I wanted to combine engineering and medicine, so I transitioned to biomedical engineering. I did that for my throughout my undergrad, master's, and PhD again, and then I was a purist and wanted to pursue basic research, and I wanted to discover what ails life in general, and then I joined medtech companies, both large and small. I worked in consulting. I worked for big companies like Medtronic, worked in startups, and then I decided I wanted to understand better the business side of medtech, so I went and got my business chops there. did consulting for about a while for medtech and biotech, and then now I'm at Medtronic as the chief AI officer. So it wasn't something you can script, but it was I dabbled in medicine, engineering, and business. My academic formation was more in cardiology and personalized algorithms and mechanisms of pathophysiology and so on. But from academia, I've always wanted to solve acute problems at a much broader scale and working on solutions that impact larger number of patients in healthcare, in medtech, more so than in just the lab. So that's how I made that transition, because it was a kind of a calling. I still have a huge pull to academia and academic research. I wouldn't rule out, you know, going back to school someday and, you know, sitting in a student chair. But my larger calling is in medtech, and I'm happy where I am right now. So,
wow. Well, you really are the true embodiment of a forever student.
That's right. That's right.
Well, with all of your experience and your different interests kind of leading in the same direction, let's bring in the artificial intelligence layer. So at what moment in your career, or in your academic career as well, I mean, what was that aha moment where you realized that AI could really impact healthcare?
Yeah, what's the adage? Necessity is the mother of invention,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So I don't see it necessarily an aha or a transition or a shift. For the last 25 years or so, I've been consistent working with people and in areas where you derive insights from data. So that is the common thread. So I've been in this space broadly for quite a while. Over the last decade, more specifically to the AI, I was at Medtronic leading R&D teams, and we were trying to tackle large data volumes on a diagnostic cardiac sensor. So this was like an adhesive patch that does diagnostics and monitoring for patients. But the goal was to address the amounts of data coming out of that solution at the point of data collection, so at the patch itself, at the patient level, but also on the back end where the physician interfaces with these computer systems to see the result of that monitoring. The intention was always to produce a better solution that benefits the patients and provides the right data information to healthcare providers. So when I took over programs in the implantable side of the business, this approach was not possible for implanted devices because they have limited compute and they have limited storage in the device itself. So everything that's possible with a standalone computer plugged into the wall and a rechargeable battery device like your smartphone or something is not possible in an implanted device. So even though there is transferability in some of this AI solutions that could help, there was a huge barrier for doing complex algorithms and computationally heavy solutions in an implanted device. So we knew AI could solve a problem, meet a need that customers and patients have, and it would work equally well in implantables as it has in externals, but you can't run these algorithms in the device. So to harness AI for that application, for the implanted cardiac product applications, we needed to solve it indirectly. And that's where I led the team to invent the distributive computing approach for our implanted cardiac monitors, the Link Accurhythm device. This is an insertable monitor that's put under the skin to detect infrequent arrhythmias, and it stays in the body for about 4 to 5 years. To do that, we had to kind of rethink the way you can apply AI to a field that, you know, typically has not used AI, and it just needed this additional innovation to support that journey, and the rest was history. So that was the aha.
That's great. So we're definitely going to be digging into the Accurhythm AI for sure. I love how you describe this sort of blasé, like this is normal. This is a Tuesday afternoon, but
it isn't.
Good point. In Portland, Oregon, where I'm surrounded by a camera, and that's my big day. Yeah, for me, this seems like just mind-boggling. It's a paradigm shift. That's what you're talking about here. And again, you're so blasé about it. I mean.
I should invite you one day to come and walk the halls of Medtronic. There's been never a more humbling experience in my life than coming into this company. And you come in thinking, hey, I was top of my class, top of my field, top of my university, whatever. You come here and you find out everybody's top of their class, top of their field. So it's a very humbling experience. And you have to kind of give it, give props to all the smart people that work around you. I just happen to be here learning from them. So it's all good.
You know, that melts my heart. And that's actually one of the reasons why I'm coming into 20 years in the medical device industry. I have never considered myself a very smart person. I always had to study really hard. I got great grades because I'm dedicated and, you know, I follow through, but I never really saw myself as smart. But I have been so inspired by the smartest people around me, and it's almost intoxicating. And this industry, just to your point, you're talking about a literal hallway. In 20 years, I've been down many, many different hallways. And as soon as I think, wow, that's the smartest person I've ever met, you know, fast forward 35 seconds. And I'm like, that's the smartest person that I've ever met. And it is so encouraging, and it wakes me up every single day just to know that there are people in this world who are much more educated, much smarter, much more passionate, moving health forward. I mean, that's kind of incredible.
That's my Tuesday.
Okay, well, I'll be visiting you on a Tuesday. So let's just shift just a little bit. So you did give us a lot of information, and we're going to break that down here shortly, but let's start at the highest level. Artificial intelligence as a definition. So that's something that we all struggle with. And there's different definitions depending on your perspective from an organizational or an individual. So lay it on me. Rudolph, what is AI?
That's that needs its own like a two-hour conversation. But AI is the latest buzzword, and it means different things to different people. So you ask two people, you get six answers. And it's applied differently, defined differently. At Medtronic, I usually use jazz hands when I say AI, so people know that I'm about to, name drop. But in its simplest terms, and in a more serious note, AI is merely a simulation of intelligence by a computer system. So it's a programmable response in a system. But the reason it is so hard to pinpoint is because it's a very, very broad category of simulated intelligence. And it's been around since the 40s. Like, so the Turing machine, and when we were hacking code from World War II, I mean, artificial intelligence goes far that far back. The actual term was coined in the 50s. There was a session that was done, a first conference was done in 1955, I believe. And that term has grown, and it encompasses many subfields and many specialties in mathematics and statistics, like expert systems, intelligent rule-based algorithms, and so on. Maybe the question you were trying to get to is, relatively recently, there's been a big focus on AI, and it's mainly because of machine learning and deep learning and generative AI. So these are new sub-disciplines within AI, but we still say AI because it's an easy term, it's catchy. To say machine learning or deep learning makes it a little bit more granular. But in medtech and in most of the recent innovations that you're probably have been hearing about, it's mostly machine learning, deep learning, and generative AI. And that's when a computer or a simulated intelligence learns, that's what's called machine learning, because it learns from data without explicit programming. And it can make inferences and classifications on the data that it was trained on. And then you can use that inference on data it's never seen before. So the interesting piece of all of this, and if you contrast that with DSP, the digital signal processing that we historically have done, you needed like a PhD or a domain expert that understands the underlying fundamentals in a causal way, takes the data and explicitly programs an algorithm and all the steps of, you know, convolution and absolute value. And so all the mathematical equations are programmed step by step to be able to deliver an answer. And that's based on our causal understanding of how we build algorithms in DSP. come enter machine learning and deep learning, none of that matters anymore. As long as you feed an algorithm data that's properly labeled or unlabeled, depending on the solution you're using, machine learning will find the patterns on its own. You may not understand why, we may not understand causally what it is. It doesn't make the answer any less true. It's just our understanding as human beings hasn't caught up to what a machine has inferred. So machine learning and deep learning is the big category that's recent. And a lot of other new categories have also propped up with like computer vision, which is like your phone sorting your pictures and recognizing you to unlock your smartphone. Natural language processing, which is you're transcribing your speech to text or text to speech in your on your phone, and generative AI, which is the ChatGPT and the generative content. But in healthcare, and more specifically, you know, maybe at Medtronic, to your question, when we talk about AI, we're referring to the more mainstream regulated applications of AI that are more recent. So we talk about it in terms of MLDL, machine learning, deep learning, and computer vision. But we leverage generative AI and GPT for like productivity, automation, but it's not in our medical products because it's not a regulated solution and it's still nascent, relatively speaking. I know it's a long answer, but I told you AI is a topic in and by itself.
I mean, Rudolph, tell me, promise me that you're giving masterclasses. And don't tell any of my other guests, but this was by far the best answer to that question. I feel as though I can almost visualize it in a way that I've never visualized it before. I mean, you really helped communicate to a layperson, so thank you.
Fantastic. Glad I was helpful.
And we'll be back with Dr. Kathra shortly, but I'd like to finish up my sit-down with Mike Monavoukas, co-founder and CEO of AcuityMD. Take it away, Mike. Let's shift to talking about sales reps. So how can medtech sales reps break through an increasingly difficult sales channel and win over more doctors and more hospitals?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it all comes down to understanding the market you're in and understanding your ideal customer profile intimately. And there are a variety of different strategies to do that using data and using you know, things like, you know, who have you already had success with in the past? Who do those surgeons know? Who do they train under? Who do they train with? You know, what does their clinical practice look like compared to other surgeons? So understanding your ideal customer profile is paramount. I think, you know, and going back to the last point, you know, the best sales reps are able to kind of make the leap into consultative partners to that health system or to the overall hospital administration. And as hospitals and health systems become more and more financially savvy, and you can see the explosion of investor interest and private equity capital into providers and into rolling up, you know, healthcare institutions. And I'm not here to argue the merits or the ethics of those types of investments at all, but the reality is there that these, you know, healthcare providers are becoming more financially motivated. And indeed, COVID and elective surgeries, you know, falling off and that permanent dislodging of, you know, surgeries to ambulatory surgery centers that are freestanding and perhaps not affiliated with the hospitals. Like there are some real impacts to hospitals in America today. And so given these trends, sort of going back to that point on empathy, you have to understand, you know, the financial climate that these hospitals are operating in. And it'll be paramount for, you know, med tech companies and successful reps to dig into those, to deeply understand the health of the hospital and the local market conditions for that hospital, the competitive environment, you know, competing IDNs that they might be losing patients to, the reimbursement landscape. All those things are table stakes for research, for sales reps to really build a compelling ROI case to elevate, you know, their role from, you know, a clinical subject matter expert to a trusted advisor for hospital executives. That's a big jump. And, you know, but if done right, it'll help reps articulate how their technologies can not only drive clinical outcomes, but can drive financial outcomes. And that is a slam dunk in the value committees that, you know, that these reps are trying to get their products through. So that would be kind of my overall advice. Understand your ideal customer profile. Come at it from a, you know, a perspective of empathy. Understand the financial, you know, the financial context that your, you know, target ICP is operating within, and become a more consultative seller and a consultative partner to those stakeholders.
Well, you had said this is where you saw the market going. Let's continue that thread and let's look to maybe 5 years in the future. So what excites you when you think about the acceleration of AI in medtech within the next 5 years?
Yeah, it's going to be a fun 5 years. And just looking back to where we were 2 years ago, there's been an incredible transformation. And I think where I get really excited thinking about AI, and I absolutely see, you know, advancements in, you know, AI in imaging and, you know, in procedures like endoscopy and, you know, identifying, you know, cancer tissue. And I definitely think there's a strong use case and a bunch of emerging technologies at the intersection of imaging, AI, cancer detection that can both drive efficiency for the hospital and also improve patient care. So that's like real and happening right now. When I think 5 years from now, I think some of the technologies that you're seeing out of, you know, Meta and Google and, you know, some of these big technology vendors, you know, a lot of like the paradigm of where you do your work makes shift. You know, Meta showed their new glasses, right? And these glasses and Apple as well with their Apple with their product as well. Meta's is the Oculus product. But long story short is it's making it easier to, you know, be in an operating role without needing to look at a screen and having helpful prompts and having, you know, the sort of see through a screen capability so that you could potentially care for a patient and also get information about the case and information about, you know, the what's going on intraoperatively. Like, I think that's a huge opportunity. So the modality of where you view information is shifting. And I think that's really exciting. And combine that with some of the image, you know, detection advancements that we're making is going to transform surgery. I really believe it, because you're not going to have to, you know, really worry about where you're angling a camera, and you're going to have a delay between taking an image and processing it. That can all be surfaced in real time intraoperatively. And I think in 5 years from now, you know, if I were to make a bet, I would say that most surgeons will be using some sort of pass-through vision technology while they're conducting surgery, because it will benefit them in such tremendous ways from improving the actual surgery, driving efficiency with it, identifying, you know, risks during the surgery. So I think I really see a ton of innovation there at the intersection of imaging, you know, pass-through video and lens technology and some of these new form factors where you're not looking at a screen or you don't have to disrupt your workflow to look at a screen, you know, glasses, for example. So very excited to see where we head, I think. And, you know, that's my prediction for 5 years. It's probably going to be wrong, but it would be really exciting to see that.
Well, maybe the only thing wrong about that prediction is it's going to be next year instead of 5 years. Yeah. With the rate of acceleration. Well, Michael Wanavoukas, co-founder and CEO of AcuityMD, thank you so much for joining me on Device Talks AI. I knew I would, and I absolutely did. I love this conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Kayleen. It's great to be here. Excited to see what's to come in AI here.
And to our audience, once again, if you want to learn more about AcuityMD, please visit their website at www.acuitymd.com. That's www.acuitymd.com. And now for the conclusion of my interview with Dr. Kathra, Vice President and Global Chief AI Officer at Medtronic. Let's talk about Medtronic's AI Compass. So, I mean, that's a very powerful, exciting initiative. And I'm going to ask you again, as a layperson, if you could give me another summary, like what is the AI Compass and how does it really provide support to the clinician?
Oh yeah, that's a good one. So AI, as I've described earlier, has become very ubiquitous. It's very easy to access. It's very attainable. There's a lot of open source work that can be done with AI. So the barriers to entry into this space are very, very low. But because of its ubiquity and anybody can use it, it raises new and important considerations. So I'll give you an example. My son is 13 years old. He's learning how to program in middle school in Python. So my son does AI and he's 13 and he's using the public available tools to him. With that ease and approachability of a technology, at Medtronic, we wanted to set and declare our guiding principles on how we would ethically use this technology to support healthcare, to benefit users, to benefit patients and healthcare providers. Because it's easy to do, it doesn't mean everybody should do it. Doesn't mean it can also be done in ways that may not necessarily have the core principles that we live by. So we took a stand and basically published our guiding principles, which are our AI compass, and it's publicly facing on our website. And it has seven main components to it. Let me see if I can remember all seven of them. The first is beneficial use, which is it's got to do something useful to advance our mission, to advance our philosophy in patient support and customer support. It's got to be safe, secure, and effective. So we're not going to just throw something out there that's hasn't been tested safe and effective for its use. We want to eliminate potential bias and discrimination in those solutions because obviously, like I said, these are trained on data that you feed into it. And if you only have data from people like you or from a region of the world that only doesn't represent the rest of the population, you may end up either deliberately or unintentionally with biased and discriminatory content. So that was part of our principles as well. We have to adhere to Medtronic's quality standards, which is uncompromising level for us when we work on medical devices. We have to leave enough human control and human oversight to it because we don't want machines doing what machines do without an expert in the loop. How many have I said? All right. Number six we protect data from people and protect their privacy. So since we are feeding a lot of this data into these solutions, we want to make sure personal data is and privacy is protected. And then lastly, facing the physician, we want to make sure it's transparent. AI is a black box. Like I said earlier, you don't necessarily know causally what it's doing. And that gives a lot of people some angst around, like, how do I trust this machine or how do I trust this algorithm? Transparency is a huge component and explainability is a huge component as we're trying to solve complex medical problems. And that's important for customers, patients, physicians, clinicians to know and trust. So that was our attempt to say, hey world, this is how we do AI at Medtronic, and those seven principles guide us.
Well, as a forever student, I give that a solid A. Well done.
Awesome. I like it.
So we talked about the definition of AI generally. We talked about Medtronic's guidepost and how you're using and integrating artificial intelligence. Let's go a little more granular and let's talk about your insertable cardiac monitor space, or ICM. So you're coming into 25 years in this space. You mentioned the Link system earlier. So, and AccuRhythm AI. So let's talk about that more. How has the introduction of AccuRhythm AI set the Link ICM apart from traditional cardiac monitoring methods? And how has it changed the way Medtronic is approaching this space? It's a big question.
It's another big question. So let me see how to best answer that. Cardiac monitoring, and let's define cardiac monitoring. It could be anything from monitoring physiology, the plumbing of the heart, blood pumping and so on, the mechanics, or it could be the electrical side of the house, which is arrhythmias and electrical monitoring and so on. ICMs or Link cardiac solutions play in the electrical side of the house, right? So we don't measure plumbing, blood flow and pressures and so on. So the field of electrical monitoring, that's been around for about 100 years. Eindhoven got his Nobel Prize in 1924. We are 2024, so That's about 100 years to the year. So historically, and if you Google like Eindhoven Triangle, you'll see a guy with a foot in a bucket of water and two arms holding cables. So it creates the traditional leads that we use to diagnose cardiac conditions. But the dummy clinical things aside, the technology side of it, you need wires, you need a computer to store information, you need algorithms to process this electrical signal, and tons of human time spent interpreting those recordings, that ECG, the blip you see on the screen. We still do this with even to this day. So 100 years ago, this was invented, and we still do 24 or 48 hour Holter monitors. I don't know if you know what that is. That's usually, if you go to diagnose, you wear a little pager looking thing with wires all over
the
body.
I did. Actually, in first grade. Yes.
And I'm hoping the audience that's listening to this knows what that is. So
a fanny pack.
Yeah, a fanny pack. That's right. For some of them. So with Link, we wanted to kind of revolutionize the way that is done and do something similar that's a little bit more patient friendly, a little bit more clinically friendly, and so on. So we created this insertable solution that goes under the skin and lasts 4 years, and it does the same thing that a Holter kind of does. It monitors rhythms for AF, for atrial fibrillation, for bradycardia, tachycardia, and other abnormal rhythms. But there's no wires. It's totally ambulatory, and it matches the patient's lifestyle and needs to detect and diagnose conditions that are infrequent, quote unquote. Because if they happen right then and there with your physician, they don't need to monitor you. But if it's something that they can't diagnose right away, you will need something like this. So the ICM field started in the mid-90s. You said 25 years ago. We introduced the first solution in the late 90s as the Reveal product. That over time, that's become smaller and smarter. We added new sensors, we added new capabilities, longer battery life, and so on. So we went from, actually, I have some in here for display. So this is the Reveal.
Oh my gosh.
And this is the Reveal Link. So it's about 80-some percent smaller. It's about a third of a AAA battery, if that makes any sense to you. So this device goes under the skin. It is designed to be extremely sensitive, so it can pick up and listen to your heart all the time. And with that comes the possibility that it's going to err on the side of detecting something, even if it's not there, because you don't want to miss anything. So it's designed on purpose to be highly sensitive and relatively less specific. So before Accurhythm, physicians would basically get all the data that comes from that device, and they would log on a monitor, and they would go through all this data and toss out the ones that are false and then focus on the ones that are valuable. And that's where they derive their clinical insight. With Accurhythm, we were able to add algorithms, AI-based algorithms in the cloud that toss out about 90% of all of these false episodes. So you only get the relative information that the physician needs to derive clinical insights or manage the patient, and then without any trade-off on sensitivity. So the sensitivity remains what was initially intended, and so on. But remember earlier when I was telling you, you don't have enough compute to put in this device. You needed something in the cloud, and that was the innovation that was on there. So we went from a miniaturized solution, we added AI, and then we're already on the third iteration of it. So we've evolve this algorithm over time, and so on. So when you ask the impact on the field and what does Medtronic do over the 25 years in that innovation, so this solution, the first big one, was the first of kind market maker, never seen before solution till we invented it. And then we made it smaller, which was first of its kind, miniaturized solution. We added AF, more algorithms, which were first of kind. We created remote connectivity, which was first of kind. And now we added AI, which is first of kind. So we continue to disrupt the space, even though it's 25 years old. You'd think it's an old tired dog, and it's not. We continue to find new ways to make this innovation more powerful and more impactful for patients. So,
well, speaking from the patient perspective, I think I had raised my hand saying that I had worn a cardiac monitor. I was in first grade,
And it was very bulky fanny pack. I had to sleep with it. And I remember, this is all I remember, and this was, you know, I was first grade, so I mean, we're talking about 30 plus years ago. And I remember just sobbing because my teacher wouldn't let me play on the playground. So I would rip all the monitors off and I'd take fanny pack and I would kick and scream, and then I'd go and play and I'd come back and I'd put it back on as much as I could before my mom picked me up from school. I mean, that's not patient adherence.
Yeah, that's right. You're a terrible patient.
I was an awful patient. I was a first grader and all I wanted to do was hang on the monkey bars. I mean, that was my dream.
Yeah.
But two things kind of out of that. One, I never made the connection that was a medical device until this very conversation. So thank you, Rudolph, for kind of making my life full circle.
Wow.
There's something there. I'm going to have to really think through that. There's something there. There's a there. It's about why from that moment I'm sitting in this chair. But this also really illustrates the need for innovation. So you said, you know, 25 years is an old dog, or we, you know, you could think it was an old dog, this kind of old stagnant place, but, or space, but it needs innovation. It needs more advancements. So the first grader who's kicking and screaming because they want to play on the monkey bars doesn't have to kick and scream because it's part of, it's a seamless integration into their day-to-day. Right. It's not interrupting them. So
that's right.
All of these iterations and these advancements are so important. And thank you for every impact that you've made on the iterations.
I didn't do any of this. This was smarter people than I am. I was just there to kind of add the AI piece to it. So
that's huge.
A lot of smart people within the company.
Well, we can't dismiss the AI part. So, you know, you mentioned there's three iterations of AccuRhythm AI. What has been the biggest lesson as you've gone through the three iterations?
Yeah, so I think I touched on that in a second ago. So, yeah. Like I mentioned, it was the first of its kind implanted cardiac device that uses distributive computing. That's where you design things as a system, where some compute gets done in the device itself, some compute gets done in the cloud to deliver a system level solution, right? A sum of all the components. This allows us through these iterations to, as you develop a new algorithm faster, you can deploy it, and it retroactively applies to every patient that's ever had this device implanted and still has it implanted. Not ever, but so you have to still have it on. So this would do the largest amount of benefit and to a large extent makes the solution future proof. So let me put that in context from a non-medtech example. So imagine you have a smartphone. It comes preloaded with all of the apps you like, and you buy it, and it's yours. And now every time there's a new app, a new enhancement, a new game, a new sound, new songs you want to download, new features, whatever, you need to go and buy a new phone. Because your phone, the one you have, does not update, and everything's already locked in it. Now, but people who buy the newer phone get the better apps and the better games than you do. So this is what we were trying to solve for with this solution. So this is how the industry operated traditionally. And that's fine when you implant a device and it has, let's say, a life-saving algorithm. The therapy doesn't need to change appreciably, and you're fine. But when you're talking about things that are diagnostic and things that need to evolve to deliver better value for the patient, take the example of you on the monkey bars, to diagnose all the conditions you want or whatever is for that patient, you need to evolve these solutions over time. And then using that system level approach, we're able to deploy a new algorithm in the cloud, and then automatically everybody that has this device gets it. And that's never been done before. And like you said, third iteration, this has been possible because we kept challenging the successes we've had in this field and disrupting our own successes. So you're asking about the biggest lesson. I would say that's a transferable biggest lesson, which is there's always room for innovation and disruption. And AI happens to be fueling that effort currently, but the intent is to deal with the Kayleen, the, you know, first grader on the monkey bar, because that's you know, you got to meet the patient where they want. You got to meet their lifestyle, where they are and how they want to be, you know, handled and dealt with. So from the further medical perspective, I mean. So that's why the disruption and the innovation needs to continue. And that's the biggest lesson, I guess. And we share that across all the groups here.
Oh, that's a terrific lesson, and I think could probably apply to the industry at large. I mean, but you had said this really beautiful phrase that I'm going to pull out. I'm going to quote it because I think it was just so fantastic, and just about disrupting your own innovations. That, I think, is super unique. Instead of just going, wow, you know, here's an innovative approach. This is a change, a game changer. Let's move on. It's, well, let's continue to disrupt our own disruptions. That's very special.
That's great.
Rudolph, we talked a little bit about your cardiac monitoring. Let's move into your recent launch of an AI platform for robotic surgery. So that's a significant leap, talking about leaps. You know, how do you see this platform transforming surgical practices? And what role does AI play in enhancing real-time decision-making in the actual operating room?
Yeah, so we... not sure how familiar most people are with the Medtronic portfolio. We have two types of robotics and robotic surgery solutions. We have the soft tissue robotics, which we do for soft tissue, and we have spinal and cranial robotics that we do for the spine, for corrective surgeries, for scoliosis and spinal deformities and mobility in the orthopedic side. If you think about the field the way that is done right now, so let's say you have a severe curvature in the spine, you come in, on the shelf are these titanium rods that are available with titanium screws. So the physician makes some measurements, grabs some of these rods that come in straight, and then they bend them through a special bending tool, like metalwork or metal shop in school, and to try to match the curvature they want that patient's spine to be, and then they put that onto the patient in the operating room. Think about the patient's journey in here, and if we want to talk about getting the best outcome for the patient, if you think about the imaging that gets done prior to this. For the physician to know that your spine has that curvature, they do a lot of CTs and X-ray, and they have these images. You can formulate a plan, a procedure plan, that's personalized to the patient based on the images you get from them. So imagine now if you can pre-bend these metal rods and screws to the plan you want. So when you come into the hospital to get this procedure done, there's already a plan that's been done. You have the rods pre-shaped. You can put those on the patients in the procedure, and you can manage their outcome. So the evolution here and the vision for AI and what we've been putting to practice is managing this patient journey from pre-procedure, intra or peri-procedure, and post-procedure. So now a total personalized solution can be created for every patient as a unique person rather than these standard one-size-fits-all types of rods that are done. We custom make these rods for every individual patient because when the AI takes this images from the CT, the ideal plan for that patient gets designed, the physician approves it. It goes to one of our facilities where these rods are made specifically with that curvature that the physician wanted. It gets shipped to the hospital in 2 days, and then they get into the patient during that procedure. And then we do post-procedure follow-up to make sure, did the physician successfully achieve his plan or her plan for that patient? And then how do we best improve that patient's outcomes in that way? So the AI offers a window to innovate across the entire patient journey from pre-procedure, intra-procedure, and post-procedure. But that's not unique to robotics. So when we think about all of our businesses, whether you're talking about endoscopy, soft tissue robotics, hard tissue robotics, cardiac ablation through catheters, all of our procedural businesses, if we want to personalize the experience and the maximize the benefit to the patient, AI can play a role in completely customizing that procedure for a given patient.
So it really is bespoke medtech.
That's right. Personalized medtech. There you go.
Oh, the future is so bright. Well, speaking of the future, and I want to really take us kind of broader. The future of this space is changing, and a lot of the reason it's changing is because of your role. And the reality is that stakeholders in medtech, they're looking at you specifically and what you're doing. There's a lot of pressure. I hope you're feeling it. I hope I'm making you nervous. No, I'm kidding. But really, what advice would you give to these medtech companies who maybe are more hesitant when it comes to embracing artificial intelligence?
That one's easy. I just don't do it.
You heard it here, folks.
I'm just kidding. So that's the philosophical question, right? I don't think I'm very qualified to give anybody any advice about how their businesses should be run or anything, but I can talk about our philosophy in this area, or how we approach this space. And if that resonates with somebody else, great. So I personally try not to get caught in the hype of AI. So AI is a means to an end. Again, Jazz Hands AI. But AI in and by itself is not the goal. You don't want to be a hammer looking for nails, right? For some medtech applications, some of these, like the stuff I've been describing around the patient journey and around the customization and personalization of healthcare, integrating AI into the portfolio will open a door to an entirely new set of automation of medical procedures, deriving new clinical insights like we were doing with the Accurhythm, advancing therapeutic and diagnostic solutions, serve the patients in better ways, I guess, as a broad term. But in other applications, and if it's not done with that piece in mind, it'll drive the cost of technology up, it'll complicate procedures, it will change the utility of certain applications for these patients. And if it's done wrong, it would be a garbage in, garbage out. I talked about open source software and the need for unbiased, broad data sets to make it representative. So I would focus usually on a patient-centric solutioning. This is our mantra here, that we want to serve the patient the best way possible and meet the healthcare provider's needs, because they're the ones who are using this technology, serving the patients, and addressing industry gaps. So if, and that's a big if AI ends up being the best answer for what you're trying to solve, then by all means, use it right, have a cardiac compass, AI compass equivalent, stand by strong principles in using AI and go for it. There's a lot of promise, a lot of potential with AI. However, if not, if it's not the right tool for the right job, use something else. Because AI is costly. It requires institutional investments. You can't just show up on your computer and just start working on AI. You need to invest in people, in process modifications, change management, knowledge management, privacy, regulatory, clinical rigor. This is all above and beyond the typical medtech process. So if it's not the right tool for the job, you're adding a lot of overhead for no reason. So focus on the patient and then it'll all work out.
And this is exactly why I asked you that question. It was a very responsible answer. So thank you for sharing. Let's take it home. What is, if you envision our industry a decade from now, what's the wildest, most unexpected innovation that you could possibly think of that might even surprise you?
Well, very few things surprise me, but I'm a fanciful dreamer. So I watch a lot of sci-fi too, so that helps. But you said 10 years?
You could do any time frame you'd like. This is sure. The wildest, most unexpected innovation.
Yeah. So I'm super passionate about complete personalization. This is where the field is headed. In about a decade or so, we believe healthcare 5.0 will pop. It's transitioning from the world of AI in a more generalized form to AI in a more personalized form. And this will require digital twins, treatment recommendation systems, future adverse events prediction systems. That's kind of what I see. So personalized precision medicine is coming. We believe it will be, like you said, bespoke to the individual patient. And all of this AI will transition from narrow AI, which is what all the AI we do right now, it's considered a category of a very unique single task narrow AI, to more general or super AI, which is where now you're doing multimodal, multi-factor thinking, which is above the scope of narrow AI. So in that application, the solutions will be more adaptive, more personal. You'll take very patient-specific information, medical details, to create a digital twin. The digital twin will then allow you to tailor the solution to match the patient's uniqueness and give them, and uniquely them, the best possible outcome for them. So I wouldn't care about a generalized algorithm if it works for 85% of the population. I want an algorithm that works for me, and I don't care if it doesn't work for anybody else, but I want it to do the best it can for me. And if that means a one-of-kind algorithm, that's what I want. So that's the vision for 10 years. Maybe more, but this is a multi-physics, multimodal, deterministic models working side by side with generative AI that are more probabilistic models that harness, you know, all of our medical knowledge to date and all of the collective knowledge bases and so on. These solutions will also be predictive. So think about Minority Report. I don't know if you watch a lot of sci-fi.
Oh, yes.
So imagine you can predict an impending bad event and you can interfere before that bad outcome, bad heart attack, you know, emergency room visit, and you can avoid that. That would be so cool. That I think is why I get up in the morning.
Oh, that's so exciting. I love that concept. And I also love your phrase, one-of-kind algorithm. I feel like you need to trademark that and get that completely custom to you.
I'll get right on that.
Excellent. Well, Dr. Rudolf Katra, VP and Global Chief AI Officer for Medtronic, thank you for joining me on Device Talks AI. I have had the time of my life.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.
So I was right? Dr. Katra was not only warm and hysterical, but brilliant. And I meant every word when I say that I wish I could be a student as part of his masterclass. I really walked away from that conversation feeling inspired by not only Dr. Katra and what he's doing to impact Medtronic, but what Medtronic is doing to impact the medical device industry. It was a huge pleasure for me. Thank you again to Medtronic, and thank you to Dr. Rudolf Katra, Vice President and Global Chief AI Officer at Medtronic, for your time and your insights. And a huge, huge mega thank you to AcuityMD for sponsoring this episode of Device Talks AI. It is always a pleasure. It is always a great day when I have the chance to sit down with Michael Monavoukas, co-founder and CEO of AcuityMD. Please, I hope that you can join us at Device Talks West. Again, that's October 16th and 17th in Santa Clara, California. And if I don't have the opportunity to see you in person, please message me on LinkedIn. I'm Kayleen Brown, Managing Editor for Device Talks. Drop me a message. It is always the best part of my day when I see those beautiful messages in my LinkedIn inbox and in my personal inbox. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you. More thank yous than I even have, 1,000, 1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000 thank yous to our audience for listening to Device Talks AI and for your really positive feedback. Sometimes it's hard to live in a vacuum. So to know that what Tom and I and Device Talks are doing is really making a difference, it It's everything. That's absolutely everything. So thank you, thank you, thank you for supporting Device Talks. If you haven't already, please subscribe to Device Talks on every major podcast platform. Also subscribe to Device Talks on YouTube. This is a video podcast and we have so many other video podcasts, so please check them out. And speaking of video podcasts, if you haven't already heard, we've just launched the newest video podcast as part of the Device Talks podcast network, Neuro Innovation Talks. We are doing that series with Johnson & Johnson MedTech Neurovascular. And Tom and I are mixing it up a little bit. We, instead of us hosting that podcast, we've invited John Murray, the head of global marketing for Johnson & Johnson MedTech Neurovascular, to stand in as the host and meet with and speak with some of the most famous and influential neurovascular surgeons who have helped shape the stroke market in the neurovascular space. Again, if you haven't already, the first episode with Dr. Alejandro Bernstein is out now. So please take a look at that series, Neuro Innovation Talks with Johnson & Johnson MedTech Neurovascular. The episodes air the first Tuesday of every month. So I hope that you tune in. Once again, huge thank you for listening to Device Talks AI. I am so excited to continue to bring you these incredible medtech conversations. Thank you, and I'll see you next time.